You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 17 June. We've got local inflation data due 10 a.m. expected 4.7%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters, Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today is Melanie Bundra from FNB Wealth and Investments. So it seems that we have a peace deal between Iran and the US. There is a 14-point process that Bloomberg has published. It's going to apparently be signed on Friday. My question is there sector stocks that now we particularly turn our attention to? We're going to be chatting with the CEO of the Association of Meat Importers and Exporters, potential and challenges of global meat market for local exporters. And then Kim Pochita, certified financial planner, author and coach, why more money won't necessarily make you wealthier. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, electric vehicles, sales rise, but SARS rules stuck in the petrol era. Calls grow for guidance from Travel Alliance, company car rules to reflect an electrifying market. And from Bloomberg, Wash faces first big test as Fed chair, FOMC rate decision due tonight, no change expected. Morning markets, US was red, S&P down 0.6, NASDAQ off 1.9%. The East is mostly green. We've got Sydney and Tokyo 0.75% higher. Hong Kong is the red, off almost 0.5%, and Tencent a little over 0.5% higher. Commodities mostly green. Gold futures 4,352. Brent is 78.83. Platinum 1,799. Palladium 1,352. The rand is 16.19. Bitcoin 65,700. And top 40 opening call, green open, 850 points, 0.8% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Zimeli Mbandra, FNB Wealth and Investments. Zimeli, appreciate the early morning time. It's been a weird, three and a half months since the original attack on Iran. We kind of all, I think, got the sense that it was going to be a short-lived war. We just didn't know how long or what the impact was going to be. We certainly, as South African consumers, have felt it in fuel, most notably, of course, petrol and diesel, with the idea that we will be essentially getting a signing ceremony on Friday. Are we back to February? Are we sort of repositioning how we were before this all happened? What's your thoughts out there around the market and the investment landscape?
Morning, Simon. Thank you for having me. The signing ceremony, we eagerly await that. I mean, we have been getting quite a lot of false flags. You know, this deal has been imminent for like the longest time. Should it transpire the way it should transpire, I think we're not quite back at February, but I think we will start at least thinking in the same way we were thinking in February, at least probably for the next 12 to 18 months, as we slowly creep into the more certain certain markets. I mean, economy, global economy, but we, you know, more certain footing over the next, say, 6 to 12 to 18 months as, you know, we work this sort of like inflationary pressures out of the system. But I don't think it'll be an immediate thing, but I think we will definitely see a lot of changes. I mean, we're already expecting to see some, lower fuel prices July going forward and whatnot. And I think we would also expect to hear a less of a hawkish tone coming from central banks, which had changed to hawkish tones. We've seen the ratings upgrades. So that should support the consumer. That should ease some pressures, from a variety of sectors, and of course, just lower fuel costs. So I think from an investment perspective, you know, I'm looking at things like banks, financial institutions, which, you know, I think there's the double tailwinds there. There's the recent sovereign credit credit rate upgrade that sort of doubles down on that, that positive sentiment that we had back in February on South Africa. We still do, but as an emerging market, obviously, when there's uncertainty, we tend to see a lot of capital flight. But I mean, as I said, you know, that credit rating does support the banking sector. Also, just lower inflation expectations also supports credit, capital ratios. You know, bond prices will increase, so that liquidity ratios improve. Also, net interest margin pressures also stabilize, so we might see expansions there. But I'm also liking the consumer, direct consumer facing sectors, like food retailers and your producers and consumer directory, discretionaries. As I said, you know, it sort of eases pressure on the consumer from an inflation perspective and also from a credit rate perspective. I think lending costs will decline, but also just the consumer will have a little bit more money to spend. Also, just the retailers themselves, which have been absorbing quite a lot of these inflationary pressures, can see a little bit of margin expansion. But I think this will transpire probably over 6 to 12 months, not immediately, but yeah.
I take your point. This is going to be a process rather than a particular a single event. And there has been, I mean, and particularly like your point around sovereign upgrades. I mean, these kind of got lost in the craziness of the last couple of months. But those are big, important points, albeit very, very slow points, to your point. That's not going to change things in a hurry. That's a big one to turn around and get going. But it is going in the right direction.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's playing out, the sentiment. I mean, I think it just speaks to the sentiment, that the global investor supposed cohort has in South Africa. I think it's very positive. We've been seeing a lot of positive, I mean, a lot of strength in the rand, so we've been importing a little bit of less inflation than we should have been importing, even with the uncertainty. The rand has maintained that trading around 16 rand, 16 something, for, you know, throughout this period, which to me has been extremely impressive, and the bond yields have also held up quite well. As I think the sentiment is positive, given that we are governed by a coalition government. This is extremely stable, comparatively, that is. So I think we are starting to see things play out, and hopefully, I think, you know, this risk on mood, we're seeing consumers, I mean, our capital being recycled back into sort of the riskier assets. I think we should see some positive moves in the local market as well.
Yeah, and I forgot about it. Sunday was 2 years of Government of National Unity that has survived incredibly well. Yeah. We'll leave it there. Zimile Mabandra, FNB Wealth and Investments. Appreciate the early morning time. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting now with Paul Matthew. He's CEO of the Association of Meat Importers and Exporters of Southern Africa. Paul, appreciate the early morning part. Meat exporting, an important part of our agri-economy. We export a fair bit, but you make a point in a note you put out late last week that we're not maximizing it, and we've got relationships that are sort of in place but being allowed to, maybe deteriorate is too strong a word, but not being maximized as they could potentially be.
Yeah, morning, Simon, and morning to the listeners. We sit in a situation, obviously, as a country, we've had issues with foot and mouth and so on, but we have markets that are open to us to say, you know, we would accept your product as is, being vaccinated. And a good example of this is the UAE. But our problem is that we cannot get our own government to get these markets open for us to actually get the product through. So there seems to be a real problem in terms internally with Department of Agriculture to get these health certificates in place.
And that was going to be my next question. I mean, I imagine a farmer can do a lot, but ultimately it is the department, it is government, which is the important player, the significant player in this environment, particularly in the case of export.
Yeah, 100%. So what initially happens is that these trade agreements have to be negotiated between government and government. So as private sector, we can't even get involved in it. Obviously, we can facilitate discussion, we can push from our side, but they need to put together. So, I mean, if you just have a really good example, if you look at Qatar, it's been closed for 2 years now. They're ready to take our lambs. We're ready to export. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in the 2 year period, we've lost reason as a industry, as a country, about 1.5 billion since 2024, wow, which is ridiculous. And there just seems to be no urgency from government side to get the process going. And then on the other hand, you've got the minister saying publicly, oh, we've got countries that are interested in our products, and putting that out into the media space. But his own department, he's not moving and getting these markets open for us.
I get your point. I mean, and I mean, it is, you know, the interest is great, but we need that process to actually happen. And some of it would seem to be, I mean, inconsistency. I mean, the article you write around inconsistent veterinary interpretation between provinces. I mean, this is an old story that I imagine has been ongoing for some time, and is a huge stumbling block potentially.
Absolutely. So what happens in South Africa, the actual provinces through the state vets, they mm. are actually authorized to sign off health certificates for export. Mm. They sit now, they refuse to move because they're saying they're not hearing from national. Mm. National not communicating back down to provincial to say, you know, these are issues, this is what we're working on. So there's just no communication between national and the provinces. So everything just sits. Everyone just sits now, waits for national, and nothing's happening on their end. So yes, you know, we just lose days and days of really good trade. And obviously these animals are being produced, the farmers yeah. are farming them, and we don't have markets to go and place them.
And that's the crisis aspect of it, is that we could be doing this. We could be that 1.5 billion you mentioned to Qatar. We could have supplied it, and it would have created foreign revenue, would have created income for farmers, jobs. I mean, the whole gambit. We know what happens when we export. It's good for the economy.
Absolutely. And it's good for the SA consumer, because remember, when you're exporting, you're getting a far better price for that cut. Mm-hmm. So it helps regulate the price, mm-hmm. you know, for the consumer back home. So when you have a glut of all this product on the market, is that the farmers need to recoup costs. And who pays for that? You and I as the consumer.
I hadn't thought of that. A last question. You mentioned foot and mouth, and I would have thought that would essentially have closed off our export borders in the beef industry. But you, is that perhaps potentially not the case for all markets?
So, you know, it all depends what the country you're exporting to, what their sanitary requirements yeah. are. So if they're happy with the program of vaccination, mm-hmm. there's good traceability, mm-hmm. they would accept the product. Okay. And we can see that with UAE. We see that now with Jordan. So we've just opened the market for Jordan for beef. So these countries are saying, we accept your vaccination plan. Therefore, get the product to us. Our government just sits on it and does nothing about it.
Yeah, and that just it's bad all around. Make no mistake around that. We'll leave it there. That's Paul Matthew. He's CEO of the Association of Meat Importers and Exporters of Southern Africa. Appreciate the early morning. Let your money benefit from experience with Stanlib Asset Management. Find out about Stanlib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Kim Pujita, certified financial planner, author, and coach. Kim, appreciate the time. A great piece you sent out recently, Why Earning More Won't Make You Wealthy. We all think that, I don't know, a bonus or a lotto win or a salary increase or something, just a little more money is the difference between our current tough spot and us being rich. But that's not the case. It's about habits.
Absolutely. And we all do often procrastinate and make it our excuse that because we're not earning enough, we definitely can't be investing. And we all know if we're not investing, we're not going to get wealthy.
Actually, like that point as well. It's almost an excuse. It's a cop out. And you made a point as well. It's we kind of like we say, we're not ready. We don't have the money. We don't have the knowledge. We don't have the strategy. You make a point that just start. Just start is perhaps more important than starting from a strong position or with huge knowledge.
I agree with you, and I do, because I sit with many people planning their retirements. And when I'm planning their retirements with them, they do come in with a lot of regrets. And possibly the biggest regret that I hear is that they just didn't start early enough. And normally that has happened because you know what, they just thought it wasn't the right time and that they were waiting for that right time to come one day. And with what we've got going on, we're just bombarded. I mean, every time we open our phones, every time we do anything, somebody's sending us some message of something we could buy or something that's going to make us feel better or just a little trip that we could take to reward ourselves. And we go, wow, we, you know, there's all these things at us. But at the same time, you know, I mean, I'm always one and I turn around and anybody who speaks to me, I say, you need return on life, you need return on investment. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we get confused and we just maybe do a little bit too much return on life.
We absolutely do. And it comes down to, it's around habits. And you say, you know, good money habits compound the same way investments do. And those habits can be small, they can certainly start small, but it's around those habits, which, and I like your point, it's habits in life as much as it is habits in finance.
I think that's the important part because we talked about this compounding of money and we taught that it's going to happen. But actually the root of it all is if we can compound the habits with our investing, we'll be compounding our wealth. And that is the important part. And then for me, you know, it's always, people say, well, how do you do it? So since I was 18, it doesn't matter that I've been through stages of not working when I had my children, but I have always had this automatic, and I think this is the distinguisher for all of us, that we are saving automatically with debit orders. Because when we left to what's left at the end of the month, unfortunately, what happens to us is often there isn't anything left at the end of the month. Let's be honest, things are expensive. So if you can get into that habit, firstly, of just automating your debit order that goes off into a good investment, half the work is done for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you're waiting for me to log into my bank account and transfer the money to my investment, I mean, it's just not going to happen. As you say, I'm going to spend it.
It's painful.
It's painful.
It's painful.
But it is. And I like that point there. It really, really is. Because as I'm doing it, I'm thinking of all the fun I could be having now with that money. And instead, it's going somewhere completely boring, which I will love, but I'm going to love it in decades time. And that's a hard, stark reality of it.
I know. So that's for me, the habit that I often look at to start. And then another habit maybe to discuss that's really helped me is just knowing that there's a whole lot of waste that happens in my life. And it's because I've signed up for a whole lot of things and subscriptions that I'm not necessarily using. So actually, you know, I hate the word budget. I really do, because it has such bad connotations for most of us. And most people I work with, when you even see it, you watch their body language change. But if we don't intentionally know where our money is being allocated, we are wasting a whole lot that could be just diverted into that automatic investment that you could have. So really having a note of exactly what you're spending and where it's going and checking those bank statements to see that there's not things that you don't want anymore that you're still paying for. We know gym memberships. We know all the different online platforms that we sign up for because there's a day that, you know, it enters our head that we need to have it. And then the next day we forgot we've even got it. So I think that habit of knowing where your money is going is something that's been very valuable to me in my own life.
Yeah, I do an audit of my bank account for exact those small little expenses. I do it every year. And every year when I do it, I'm like, nah, there's nothing there. I've been good. I've been reliable. And I find stuff every time. There isn't a single time when I haven't scratched my head. And often I don't even know, like there's some weird name and I don't even know who I'm paying the 80 rand a month or whatever it might be. And the other point you had in the piece was reframing money, not about status. Mm-hmm. You know, money's not for status. Money's for freedoms. Money's for choices. And when you think about it like that, it becomes a whole different mindset and a much more powerful one.
Well, it gives you the choice. A question I always ask all my clients is, what does money represent to you? Because if we know some people it's security, some people it's freedom of choice. So if you can know what it represents to you, you can be clear on what your value systems are. You then allocate your money much more to your value system than you do to worrying about what other people think of you.
Yeah.
And it is something that gives you the most freedom when you actually have your values as the top reason and the top allocation where your money is going to go, as opposed to what we think other people will be impressed by.
Yeah, and then it makes that process less painful, the pain we spoke at the top where it can hurt. But if it's going somewhere where we like, helps that pain. We'll leave it there. Kim Pugita, certified financial planner, author, coach, appreciate the time. And that's our poll today on LinkedIn. Do you do a frequent check of what you subscribed to in order to cancel what you don't need or perhaps aren't using? As I say, it's something I do. I always found something. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn. That's it for today. We're live. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Norbokle, Nicole, Sabu, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.